Welcome to the Film Look Podcast, where we try and achieve it one shot at a time. I'm one half of the Film Look, Robert Carr. We're also joined by the other half of the Film Look, Richard Scott.
Konnichiwa.
And then we're also joined by the third official, unofficial member of the Film Look, Christian Foreman.
Bonjour.
The reason that we didn't have a podcast out last week is because, the film we did watch for this week's podcast was 3.5 hours long, and it took us ages to watch it. I'm still watching it now, pretty much. It was a long one. We'll get into it later on, but I just wanted to say that up front, in case you missed us. But I do have a fact. Have you got a fact, Christian?
I've got a fact, yeah.
What a fact.
Let's do this.
You do yours, Christian, first.
Do you know the scene in Alien, you know, the iconic scene where the alien pops out of John Hurt's chest?
Yep.
Yeah, none of them knew about that.
No, that's my fact.
They got electrocuted.
So when they got shocked, it's because they were actually legitimate shock. Bad fact, everyone knows about that. Rob, go.
I always give facts that everyone knows about.
Yeah, you do.
Do you just type in movie facts and the first thing that comes up?
See, I've already
everyone
done all
knows
them,
about
Christian.
That.
I'm through this. I've actually had to move on to TV facts, so this is actually from a TV show.
All right.
Which is
the TV Love podcast.
Is that fine? Is that
yeah,
acceptable?
I guess.
Prison Break, the TV show,
yep.
Is banned in 13 prisons to prevent prisoners from creating their own escape plan.
Now that is a fact. Rob wins. That is a great
fact.
That's
not even a film fact. How come he wins the film fact?
Because it's a great fact.
Well, I think that TV show has the film look, so...
Oh yeah, definitely. Especially the first season.
It's a very cinematic looking TV show.
Yeah.
I would make a TV show. Not just a film, TV shows.
Mine was like a nice tip for when you're making your next film to surprise your actors. You know, you might get a better performance out of them.
You can't do that anymore, Christian.
No.
You can't. What was it, the 80s? 80s?
70s.
70s? 70s? You can get away with it then.
All right.
But not now.
I think my fact
was
better.
Because we were going to do that in our later show film, and maybe he's like, oh, should we actually electrocute the guy and give him a bit of a shock? No, we'll choose a balloon.
Well, no, he didn't actually have an alien coming out of his chest.
No, but everyone got surprised by getting electrocuted.
All right.
You know, if we did that in ours, we just used a balloon to make them, like, jump. And that worked.
All right.
Anyway, let's know what we're doing on...
next time, K-Dog.
Yeah, let's know what we're doing on this week's podcast.
So coming up on this week's podcast, we have news and views where we'll be discussing the stuff you can buy in the dollar store. We don't have a dollar store here, so it'll be a pound shop. And you haven't seen that, we'll be figuring out how Seven Samurai achieved the film look by dissecting its filmmaking properties. And later on, we'll be answering questions from the new Ask a Question feature over on Instagram. And if you want to send us any questions or comments for future podcasts, you can find us on Twitter at The Film Look or via email, which is thefilmlook@gmail.com.
And now you can ask Instagram
or Instagram as well.
Yeah, we're going to be doing a little bit more on there, see how all that works.
Rob, why don't you get us started with...
News and views.
Na-na-na.
News and views.
Na-na-na.
So I've got no news, just views today, from a couple of YouTube channels. So one of them's from Noptop. We've actually got a message from him later on, so stay tuned for that, about last week's podcast. But he's just put a video out about 35 things you can buy in a dollar store. Obviously, we are in the UK, so we've got Poundland, like we said.
Poundworld, which is premium Poundland.
Yeah, so a couple of... I mean, there's in...
Pound Stretcher.
Yeah, in
that's
our...
That's the classic Poundland. Yeah. That was pre-Poundland.
In our... Where we live, there's like
There's one every three shops,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, there's like five... There's five Poundlands. But the ones in America are
really good.
They're
yeah.
a lot better. So he's gone into the store and kind of found products that you can use to help make films. So there's things like obviously batteries and earbuds. You know, the earbuds, the quid ones are not so good, but for a spare pair, like, you know, having in your bag, have two or three of them just in case you have forgotten headphones before. You know, he's got coloured duct tape, obviously batteries. You know, they'll not last as long, but if you just need some in a pinch, again, have a couple in your bag. Rubber bands.
Bad people made of rubber.
Yeah. You know, mesh bags so you can put different gear in and you can see it. He's also got like plastic wallets, but ones that you can see through, so you can put like production documents in. You can get a shower curtain for a dollar, a white shower curtain. We've got one
for a single book.
Yeah, like we got one. I think it was like £8 or something like that. And it took us ages to find, so you just get a bunch of them for diffused light. You know, he even just talks about like notebooks. Like I carry a notebook, it's always in my pocket just to make notes because that's what it's there for. And so there's loads of good stuff in there. Go check out the video because he explains like how to, like what you could use these for. Even mentions like fake flowers, which would, you know, for props.
Yeah.
And just you know, in certain situations, well, you're not going to get real ones because it's going to be too expensive. So
we'll have to find out where, like, the best Poundland is. Mm. Or if there's, like, a £2 land You spend a little bit more.
I think there is a £2 land.
Is there?
I think so.
Do you get better quality from £2 land?
Double the amount. I would want
double the amount.
Oh, it's two for one.
Yeah.
I won't get one free.
You get two earphones for £2.
I mean, we shop in our Poundland, the version of the dollar store here, and
I just get sweets from them.
Yeah, that's true. We bought door wedges. We made a video about that. It's on our channel. Bought a pack of door wedges and how useful they can be on set. He actually mentions that in the video. So thank you very much, Noctop, for kind of giving us a little bit of a shout out there. The next video is from DSLR Video Shooter. I've mentioned them a million times. And the Sony A7 Mark III is out and it's like backlogged. You can't get this camera at the minute. But he went out and bought all of the different snidey versions of the batteries you can get. The Sony battery, obviously we've got a Sony A7S, but it's a new design battery which lasts a lot longer, thank God.
Right.
Because they'll last about 25 minutes.
These are the Chewits.
Yeah, the little tiny ones. So they've got a new battery out. But if you're going to buy the Sony version, it's £73 or $78 for a battery. This battery, it tests a couple of eight, I believe. From the Sony one to like it says over different brands,
like a snazzy little Chinese one or something.
So the Sony one will record just over 5 clips, and that'll be 2 hours and 52 minutes of footage.
So is that just constant recording?
Yeah, obviously with that camera, every 29 minutes and 59 seconds you have to press record. So he actually sat there and waited and pressed record again.
Right.
So you get that's recording at 4K as well. So that the Sony battery is like $27 per hour you get out of that battery.
Right.
But I mean, nearly 3 hours on the battery is wicked, because like it says, hours last 25 minutes, and that's why we upgraded our camera battery to an external one. But he goes through the list, and the ones that he finds that are the best price per like hour to record with, they were $22 for the battery, and they recorded just under 5 clips and 2 hours and 23 minutes, so about half an hour less than the Sony ones, but that's a cost of $9 per hour.
Right.
So what he says is, you know, some people don't like getting these types of batteries. We get off-brand batteries all the time.
Aye.
They've worked. There's a few failed, but they've failed over time. And I'm like, well, that battery was £4 and it wasn't £40. So
yeah.
I'm not really that bothered. So he goes through all of this and he's found this battery, and this might not be too interesting to some people, but when you're actually shooting and making stuff, especially if you're doing like long, like I say, if you do, you know, you're going to be doing a day shoot, or you're doing an event, you're going to go through batteries so
like
quickly.
Like back of a conference room.
Yeah, you know, even if you're doing a wedding, like this camera's, people have been talking about, it's amazing for like events and weddings, because the quality of it, it's really good low light, but now you've got that battery capacity. And he says, you know, get a couple of Sony ones, you know, why not have a few like actually official ones? You get one with the camera, but you know, for $22, you can buy like 4 of them for the same price of a Sony one.
Yeah.
Yes, they don't last as long, half an hour, but you've saved a hell of a lot of money.
Yeah.
And like it says, we've done the same. So.
So do these fit in like older Sony?
No. They've redesigned.
So it's a different shape.
Yeah,
everything.
Different shape. I think it might be for the third versions of the camera. So I think the R3 has these as well.
Right.
So yeah, I was absolutely atrocious. I think we've got an external battery, which I will link the video to that, and you can get just we've shot for probably about a day's use. From a NP Sony battery. Obviously you have to rig it on the outside of your camera.
It easier to get it on and off though.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, if you're all rigged out and you've got your rails on and everything, it can be difficult to pull the Chewit out the bottom of the camera.
Thing is with this, if you just wanted to take the camera where it was just the camera and the lens out for a day,
you just wanted to shoot all day,
you probably need about 2-3 batteries
now,
and for $22, I mean, I would never spend 73 quid on a battery. It's like it's very expensive. Go check that out. He's got some more statistics and links to all of those in
might
his
be some
video.
In the pound stretcher, some batteries.
Not these
£2 land.
£2 land, yeah. Maybe. Yeah,
I bet you can get them in the dollar store, though.
Yeah, it's probably more like a five quid a land.
£5 a land. £5 a land.
£5 a land. Yeah.
They should make a £5 a land.
£5 land. That's what it would be.
Yeah. Sterling.
Yeah. So that's what I've got for news and views.
News and views.
No, no, no.
News and views.
No, no, no. I freaked us out a bit there. Like.
All right. We're moving on to you haven't seen that now, and we're gonna do Seven Samurai. Seven Samurai is a 1954 Japanese epic samurai drama film, co-written, edited, and directed by, ready, Akira Kurosawa.
No.
What? Say it.
It's Akira Kurosawa.
It's close.
It was close.
Just, yeah, we're going to be butchering a lot of names in the next conversation.
Like they butchered a lot of... bad guys.
The story, bandits.
Yep, butchered nice. A lot of bandits.
Butchered so the bandits. The story. Oh, that's an album name right there.
So the story takes place in a Japanese farming village in 1586, when it is attacked by bandits who want to steal their food. The villagers then recruit some samurai to fight back, also known as A Bug's Life.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, all right, yeah, it is.
So it's got some of the strongest.
He was waiting all week to say that. His eyes have glazed over.
So it's got some of the strongest scores we've ever had on the films we've done in the podcast run so far. Since its release, Seven Samurai has consistently ranked highly in the critics' list of greatest films of all time. I think we chose it because it's in the top 10 of the IMDb 100 greatest films or something, wasn't it?
Rich? Yeah, it's somewhere up there.
Somewhere up there. Number. And it remains highly influential.
It's number 19 at the minute.
Oh, and it's one of the often seen as the most remade, reworked, and referenced films in cinema history. And it's also known, sometimes, as the first modern action film.
Oh, interesting.
Which we will get into.
Yeah.
That's all I've got for Seven Samurai. So let's move into our thoughts and reviews and opinions on the film. Richard?
Had we all not seen this?
No, I didn't have enough time in life to watch it twice. So, this was the first time I've seen it. And I can give you my opinions if you want.
Yeah, you go, because you're already rolling.
Well, my initial... when we said we'd do this film, we had no idea how long it was going to be.
Yeah.
And no, none of us decided to go on Google and just have a look at it. Because who makes films that are 3 hours and 27 minutes long?
Peter Jackson and no one else, apart from this guy.
So I think the first thing to say is that it's a long film. I think,
yeah, clocking up. And it's a long film. Right, imagine it's just a long film for 2018... But you know when you watch an old film, and even if it's only an hour and a half, it feels like a long film.
Yeah.
This feels, honestly, if you want to sit down and watch an entire trilogy of something, that's as much time as you feel like you're going to need to get through this.
So, yeah, the movie clocks in at 207 minutes, which is about 3.5 hours, isn't it? Just under 3.5 hours, mm-hmm. with an intermission in the middle. I genuinely didn't have 3.5 hours at once to sit down and watch this, so I split it over 2 days.
I'm good at that. I'd watch it in like 3 parts because like, I've been watching football and... Yeah. Yeah,
it was the week of the World Cup, and yeah. it was difficult to squeeze it in.
Yeah.
So we all didn't watch this in one go.
No. Yeah. I wish I did. I'm practicing
this because I think it ruined it for me, because it just breaks the momentum, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So I don't know if that'll affect my opinion on the film. I thought the first hour dragged a bit. I thought it was really hard to get into when they're going out looking for all the samurai and stuff. But when they all get recruited and they're heading to the village, I think that's when it starts to kick in, mm-hmm. and it starts getting a bit exciting.
Yeah.
I thought, technically, I thought it was really great. That was technically brilliant. Mm-hmm. I thought the fight scenes in particular were very powerful, and I thought the characters were nicely defined. Like each one was, you knew who each one was.
I got a comment here from the YouTube, from the music theme.
From the YouTube.
You've got the wise older leader, the young and inexperienced but eager apprentice. You've got the brash, cocky anti-hero, the silent but ultimate warrior, the muscle, the humorous morale builder, and the other guy.
Yeah.
So they are the seven samurai.
So, yeah, I suppose they were my thoughts. I'm going in. What about you?
I need to get like the bad stuff out the way so I can enjoy this podcast today.
I was going
to
say, I don't really have any strong opinions either way, so I'm hoping you two both have... opinions on this film.
Mm-hmm. Not super strong, but I suppose as we talk about it, there might be things that crop up. So in terms of negativity, the only thing that I didn't really like about this. So we obviously watched Metropolis, which is like
1927.
Yeah. And I always have this prejudice against older films of like, oh, I'm going to have to put myself in the mindset of it. And with Metropolis, I sat down and within 20 minutes, I was just really enjoying it.
Mm-hmm.
This one, maybe because it's an older film that was the first of its kind to do a lot of things, but it's also foreign. It was almost painful to watch as a piece of entertainment.
Right.
For the average film watcher, you know, the person who watches like Love Island,
no, they're not.
You just avoid this film as much as you can.
This is probably a filmmaker's film because it's always his films in particular are always taught at film schools, aren't they? They're always So I think if you're into film, you'd probably get a kick out of this film. But if you're just like you say, an average general,
someone who watches like soaps and that won't like this film at all. That's the only negative part about it. Other than that, I really really like this. And I was, you know, looking at IMDb on my phone while I was watching it because I thought with a film that has so much like history to it, I would need to get clued up on all the things that it did first. So you're saying it's the first action film.
Yeah.
It's probably invented a lot of tropes and plot lines.
Yeah.
And that made us really enjoy it. It's a very appreciative type of movie. And I really like samurais and ninjas and stuff anyway. So getting to watch a film that did this in the 50s was really interesting because there's a lot of things that it didn't have. So you watch something like, say, like The Last Samurai or a lot of like modern takes on like feudal Japan. There's just a lot of like really like high class, like temple-y stuff. And obviously you've got like the cherry blossoms and the geishas and all this. This obviously didn't have any of that because it was like this really poor farmland. And I thought that was a really interesting way to put it in because it was like no frills. Mm-hmm. And even like in the film, obviously like through the plot and stuff, what's he called again? I'm not going to name him because I won't be able to pronounce it. But the brash, cocky anti-hero is even like going around and like putting on all the dead guy's stuff.
I mean, this is, people say this is classed as the first proper samurai film.
Oh, it's okay.
Like, you know, the first time, especially that it was mainly recognized, like, is throughout the kind of world, is the very first samurai film. There's probably before this, but this is the first big epic of samurai film. So, what I really liked about this film at the beginning is it's set up in the first 5 minutes. You see the bandits go over the hill, and then you see the farmers hiding, and he gets delivered the information that they're going to get raided.
When he pops up out of the grass.
Pops up out of the grass. And then, you know, they go to, like, the village and the wise man, right, we need samurai. And then we know exactly what they need, and we know the plot of the story and what's kind of going to happen.
Yeah, that's true. I like that.
It's set up in the first 5 minutes.
It's a very simple story, isn't
it? Yeah, it is. It is really, really simple.
And it never really deviates from that.
No, it doesn't. So I really like that about it. But, you know, then you look at the clock of your time and it's still 3 hours and 15 minutes to go the film. You're like, okay.
Well, you don't, interestingly, just while you're on that, you don't see the bandits again. You see them in the first 5 minutes. You don't see them again until after 2 hours into the film.
Yeah, 2 hours. It was originally, here's an early fact for you, going to start with some more of the bandits get like raiding the village.
But right,
they kind of changed that in the edit. So it was just
make
more
it a 5 hour film.
Yeah, a bit more of a linear one of just this. I think what both of you said, the characters are all well rounded, but they should be because they've got a lot of screen time. Everyone can have a lot of screen time. I did really like the action. Some of the negative things is, and it's probably just because this is 1954, you know, the drama is, you know, people sulk a lot in these films. They'll roll up in a ball and start crying and they'll sulk about things.
There's a lot of shouting in this film.
Yeah, and it definitely dates it for me.
Yeah,
But even if, you know, you could take that bit away and it would be a really good, solid film because, you know, what they need, how, you know, you see them getting that. And the battle scene, it's like, it's well choreographed and well rounded and, you know, they've got the spots and each samurai kind of has his job. and the Not Immortal as well, which I really liked about it.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't like they were all going to get the swords at the end and hold them up to
they're
the sky.
They're not like superhero and, yeah, sword people.
They're just, you know,
in the ball of the sky. Yeah, like, they weren't going to be like, it's Morphin time.
Yeah, Morphin time. And they all have the job. And the character that I didn't really like at the beginning, but I really grew into was the kind of cocky samurai.
The brash, cocky anti-hero.
Yeah, you know, he...
If face he, of the movie, yeah, isn't he?
If you didn't have him, it would be very boring.
It would be just a bunch of guys all on the same page, mm-hmm. just helping people out.
Yeah, because the guy who's in charge, I don't know what his name is either, the main
the wise older leader.
Yeah, he's been around. It's kind of like he completely understands the cocky guy. And he knows he's there for a good reason, you know. And it's with him having him in it, it helps this film, you know.
He's almost like the devil's advocate to the whole plan, isn't he?
So like he says, and I'm glad not all of them survived. You actually seen you can sacrifice things.
I think there was three at the end, wasn't there?
Three or four, something like something like that. Yeah.
When he's talking about like the plan and stuff, and how they don't deviate from the sort of the linear storytelling, I think one way that it definitely helps in terms of being like an international film, you know, it's successful around the world, at least it is now, is that you can watch it even without subtitles and understand what's going on.
Yeah.
So obviously, like, there's people crying at the beginning that go off, and then
it translates well.
They go here, but then also like the fact that they had like a map and they were crossing them off,
mm-hmm.
and we could see that they were going around the town and saying like, oh, this is where we're going to do this and this,
mm-hmm.
and that helped with the choreography as well, because we understand that there are like three points in the town where they've created choke points for people to be able to come in and trap them, and then they're going to all run straight to the center and help each other out. Almost felt like really good tactics of a video game. Like, it's exactly what I would do.
Well, it's just great direction though, isn't it? So it's clear, basic, but perfect storytelling. So the audience knows exactly what's going on, and they know where all the characters are, and they know where they are and the geography of the set and all that sort of stuff.
Which is quite interesting, because obviously a lot of films now, especially the big action pieces, mainly rock films, they translate really well from America to Asian audiences, because they're simple to understand. An explosion is an explosion.
Yeah.
You know, you can, that's why them types of films are doing well over there. And like he says, this is Japanese, but it does well here because you can just understand it.
Yeah.
You know what they're going through. You don't need the subtitles, but obviously it helps.
You don't have the subtitles, it would be an even longer movie, because they do talk for quite a long time.
If they didn't have the subtitles, it would just be in like a modern art gallery, contemporary art gallery, sorry.
Yeah.
So I was with the subtitles, while on the subtitles, I couldn't figure out if the dialogue was dumbed down in the subtitles.
Oh, it must have been.
It must have been.
The translation must have got lost somewhere.
Or whether it was just
some
very...
Some bits are missing as well.
Yeah.
Like, you'll hear them say something, but there's no subtitle.
The dialogue was incredibly basic and simple, which again probably helped with the storytelling, but I'm like, they must be saying more than that. They must be a bit more poetry to the words, rather than just... They would say something, and their mouth would move for 5 minutes, and then he'd just say, hello. I'm like, okay.
Well,
you're just giving us the information we need, aren't you?
Yeah, that's Japanese dub, though, isn't it? Yeah. When you see the mouth moving. But it's
but it'd just be interesting to watch this as a fluent Japanese speaker, really, to see if it's different.
Yeah. See what more information you actually do get.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure they're saying something a lot more artistic.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And something a lot more like... what be the world? Wise.
Yeah.
Wise Japanese samurai. And then with our version, it's, how you doing? Yeah, I'm all right. All right, fair enough. And I would want to know, out of all the yelling, especially the brash, cocky anti-hero, he just goes, whoa! Like, all the time throughout this film. But is that a word? Or is it just a grunt? Is he saying,
that's true,
stop or get over here? Or, you know, he's not Scorpion from Mortal Kombat, but... You might actually be saying something rather than just going.
Again, on that, the acting, it's very, a lot of overacting in this thing, and it might be a 50s thing, it might be a cultural thing. I just think
probably
not,
both.
It's a bit of both, isn't it? So again, we can't judge it by the standards of today or the types of films that Hollywood produces. So
Well, like Rod said about the sulking.
Yeah.
It's like, no, you're not allowed to come with us. Oh, man. Yeah, he like crouches down and cries.
Yeah.
And then there's a bit where he's like following them.
Yeah.
And then like one of them grabs a stone and like goes to chuck it and he's like running away. It's like, you wouldn't do that these days. You'd just be like, you're not gonna, I can just dodge it. I'm ages away.
But yeah, there's a lot of overacting, and but it kind of works for the film.
Yeah.
And there's a great like,
Doesn't spoil it, does it?
There's a great energy about it, isn't it?
Yeah. Everyone seems a bit over-animated.
Yeah.
But it works on screen.
So apparently, what's his name? Something sour. I wrote it at the top.
Akira.
I was called Akira. Yeah, his directing tidbit or advice to all his actors was choose some sort of idiosyncratic tick that your character has. Mm. And just keep doing that when you're in the scene, so like touching your head or
the way the main guy rubs his head.
You hold your sword, or I think it's just his way of conveying emotion in their characters and setting them apart from each other as well. Yeah, if they've all got a thing, because we all have things. We all like do little tics and.
I mean, having seven main characters and then a bunch of villagers as well who would quite a lot. That one guy his mouth's just wide open, the villager. That's his tick, I suppose. Having seven, you kind of need those.
They need those like little standard where they stand out from each other. Mm-hmm. It's just maybe good advice in future if you're dealing with a lot of characters. You'd probably do that anyway. So.
What we talked about?
We've already talked about a lot of things.
We've talked about story and direction, but could go on to cinematography.
I was going to bring up on that. As we were talking about some of the things that this film supposedly invented, one of the things which was in Roger Ebert's essay, where we're introduced to the samurai at the beginning, where he's saving that guy's life, where he shaves his head.
Yeah.
And then he goes in, and then he suddenly becomes the main guy.
Mm-hmm.
But being introduced as the hero, with some plot that isn't relevant to the overall plot, that was the first time this did this, if that makes sense.
Oh, okay.
Do you know how it's very Bond-esque, where we introduce the Bond on a side mission?
Mm. Yeah.
And then you get to know who he is.
Running along a crane.
And then
it's got nothing to do with the actual story.
And then it
jumps
actual back into the story, but you've been introduced to that character. Mm-hmm. So that was the first time that has happened in an action film was here. Now it's a kind of trademark. Like, it would be...
You'd start off with a cold open.
You'd be hard to find an action film that doesn't have that in nowadays.
Yeah. Interesting. In terms of cinematography, was this film, like, over-cranked? Like, did they deliberately speed it up?
I mean, there's certain shots. So you've got, like, you can clearly tell the difference between the two. I'll go into a little bit about the editing later, but this is the first time he used multi-camera because he didn't want to, like, cut the action and the flow of the scene.
Yeah.
So he used multi-camera, and you can clearly tell when it cuts to that second shot because it's a punched-in version. It looks a little bit cleaner, a little bit sharper. And the depth of field looks a little bit different.
Just different, isn't it?
Completely different. Yeah. I can see why he did it, so he doesn't need to stop the flow of it. But yeah, some of the shots are overcranked, I think. I don't know if that's in transfer or whatever it's been. I mean, they haven't sped this film up at all over the 3.5 hours. but yeah, I think some of them are. There's definitely a clear difference between the two different angles, especially when there's... it's more of like the... When there's a group of people and they're talking, then one of them goes and sulks and they get that angle of that person.
Yeah.
Like, you do get that as well, yeah.
Yeah. The over-cranked feel of it kind of makes it look like the old comedy actors back in the day.
Laurel and Hardy.
Yeah, them and that guy before.
Yeah, do you want to explain?
Charlie Chaplin, yeah.
Explain what over-cranked is, just for people who...
So on the old cameras, they would like roll it at so many frames per second. Obviously with digital, we don't have that now. But they would deliberately... crank it faster so it would essentially be like fast motion.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of being like 24 frames a second, it would be like 20.
What's the purpose? Why is that beneficial though?
Everything just looks quicker and it looks more choppy.
Okay.
If you go back and look, you'll see
it doesn't look natural. I know what you mean.
It looks unnatural.
Unnatural.
I mean, you can shoot like that now. Some people do it. Corridor shoot like the Corridor Digital YouTube channel.
Yeah, so you shoot at like 20 frames per second.
Yeah, so generally you would shoot at 24 frames per second.
That's because that's how fast the human eye can read an image or something, right? They can't...
Yeah, if it's any slower than that, it means that it feels like it's a bunch of images being displayed rather than full motion.
Mm-hmm. And any faster than that,
Oh, you can chew faster.
Super,
than that.
super HD.
Like the Hobbit. The Hobbit was 60, so everything's like there's more frames being delivered into your eye in 1 second. There's 60.
But we can't distinguish that though, can we?
There is a difference when you're
you can tell the difference.
Yeah. Okay. And there was a big debate when that came out. If like, do you need to shoot 60? Should to shoot 24? But it's kind of like it's preference maybe. It's more information, especially if you're doing visual effects. You've got more frames to work with. Would that help? Or does it
possibly? Yeah. Well, the overcranked sense in terms of Seven Samurai is more like it's just like sped up footage.
Yeah.
But apparently, this was the first major use of slow mo in a film.
Okay.
So they'd obviously like undercranked it as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the bit where the guy falls over and then.
Oh, yeah, there's a couple of shots like that. Yeah.
Apparently, this is again, the first popular film.
Yeah, they are noticeable from a technical point. Like, you know when that shot's happening. It's not masked in any way. It's just like, okay, it's clearly different from the rest of them, but it works within the story, so you've just kind of gone, and it's the 50s. So.
What I really loved in terms of the cinematography of this was the amount of like orbits and tracking shots that they put into it. So there are bits where everyone gets their bamboo spear, and they're all like talking and saying like, we're going to trap these here. And there's like, I think there's four of them right in the middle of four samurai, and they're all talking to their own sort of short group. But then the camera sort of like whips around the whole thing and orbits all the way around. And you usually didn't get all that like really sophisticated camera movement in older films. At least I haven't seen any. So that was really super interesting. And there was a lot of like going from like outside to inside as well, and then coming back out again.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of sort of like dynamic movement, which I wasn't expecting.
With this film as well, obviously it was shot in 54, was on film, and a lot of it's like at night. It's really dark, and obviously with film, you have to, it's not like you can crank up your ISO any higher. There was an ISO of 200 or 400 on a film. You can't change it. It's just what the film's printed with.
Yeah.
So it's very impressive how they'll actually lit this film, and I did read somewhere, I'm going to try and find it. So the actual lighting techniques caused eye injuries because they had to be so bright or be so reflective. So to get like some of the light in, the angled mirrors around people's faces, and it was like, especially in the darker scenes, it was like had to put so much light into it. It wasn't the best for the actors. Obviously, a lot of the day stuff, it's probably just all natural or big bouncing. And obviously with it kind of being black and white, you don't notice color or anything like that, so you wouldn't be able to tell what type of light it is.
Yeah.
There
was definitely a lot of, like you say. You can definitely tell that they've added extra contrast into it by putting like bounce on the subjects and stuff.
Yeah.
A lot of the outside stuff in the forest, they're clearly like stand onto a mark where they're clearly like glowing.
Yeah. Some of the forest stuff might be, it must be all shot on location, but it might be stage stuff, some of the foresty stuff, maybe. Because it didn't look like a forest. It looked too kind of set-y, but I'm not too sure if that's the case.
Yeah.
I'll have a look while he's talking about editing. Is that next?
So, editing, apparently he just edited at night, the end of the shoot.
Oh, right.
Which is uncommon back then and uncommon today, because normally you get all the footage and you edit for 2 months after the film has been put together, right?
Mm-hmm.
But he would do that at the end of the day, which is like, I don't know, he was became known for it.
I wonder how many hours they did during the day for them to go back and edit. Especially the film needs to get processed.
Yeah.
It needs to get sent away, and then it needs to come back, unless he had the lab right next to him.
I think it was a set.
A lot of it was a set. Oh, yeah. Right, okay. Obviously, that's why they're called, interesting fact, rushes, because the film gets rushed away and then brought back the next day. It's called rushes. So.
There's another fun fact.
My thing on pacing, really, is just, you could have sped up the first hour. You could have got into it. You could have got the samurai a bit faster and back to the village.
And then just a whole setup of like them
and
the setting up the village. I mean, a kind of them trying to find the samurai kind of helped set up the story a little bit, because it's they needed the right type of samurai who wouldn't work for money. And it shows you that.
Hungry samurai.
Yeah, hungry samurai. you kind of have to see them fail as well and not get them. And then get them along the way. I like the little like the test they did as they were walking through the door, because it shows you the skill level of that samurai and how willing they would be to join them in a simple task, in a simple, yeah. You know, one of the guys walks and gets hit over the head and leaves, but one of them walks up to the door and knows there's someone behind them, shows that he's probably at a higher skill level than the other ones, and obviously then one of them's drunk, which is quite funny. So yeah, kind of like that. With the edit and the pace, I'll ask a question now, does it need to be this long?
I mean, my opinion is not.
Could you tell a more efficient story in less time with the editing?
Probably.
Because I didn't feel like there was any like shots where, I'm going to mention it, 2001, Space Odyssey, of like you're just watching something for like 7 minutes and nothing's happening. It's just the spaceship going from a little for 7 minutes and fancy nice shots of the spaceship, and then we get back to the story. There's none of that in this film.
It's more like gaps, breathing space in the performance.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think you would be able to, I mean, obviously you could cut each shot down slightly, and maybe by doing that you would take maybe 10 minutes out of it, but I don't think you can,
there's nothing,
I don't think you could really cut this down, because this, it's all just in the performance, and you would have to cut half the performance out.
Yeah.
And with a 50s performance, it is like elongated, and
yeah.
You're kind of like being, you know, you have to be deliberately over the top because of the dumb 50s audience.
Well, it was like that, wasn't it? So yeah, I agree. I don't think you could cut it down. And like I said, with 2001, you could cut 2001 down.
Actually, yeah. 2001 alone.
No, because yes, it looks, I'll say it for people who don't know our opinion on it, but it looks beautiful, but a lot of it you could cut out to tell a more efficient story.
And that's not even the bits where things are actually happening. All of that's totally fine.
Yeah.
It's the establishing shot of a spaceship. And, you know, you see it for 5 seconds and that's all the information you get, but then it continues to just keep slowly spinning for the next 2.5 minutes, and you're just thinking, oh, wait, man, get on with it.
Like, where's the story going from now? And you just don't need it to tell it in a story, I don't think. It looks beautiful, but yeah, me and Rich don't like 2001 as much as most people. If you haven't listened to that episode, you can find it. But you're probably not one of the rest two. Of them. So,
yeah.
Right, so
Christian really likes it, though, so we have a good argument about it. It's really fun.
So sound design?
Right, there was usually you can hear like the Hollywood 50s sound stage, Foley room, footsteps, things like that. This film just didn't have it.
Mm.
It's just lacked a lot of sound.
Yeah, it was quite a silent film, wasn't it?
There was no schwing.
Yeah, but
there was no clink clink.
It doesn't happen in real life, though.
There was no footsteps.
Yeah.
Other than what was recorded in the dialogue, I feel like it was, other than maybe a few extra sound effects, there wasn't a lot put into this.
Not a lot more added. Just what was recorded on
pretty
set.
Much.
Yeah. Uh-huh. I mean, with Samurai Swords, the whole swing thing, it doesn't happen.
Yeah, you would just... You would dull your blade sheath, if you did that.
Yeah, the sheath is like...
Yeah, they need to be silent, don't they?
It's made out of like leather.
Yeah, didn't Mythbusters... or someone's done this, and there's a video about it, and the whole theory about that just doesn't happen. Well, it's cool, isn't it? If I made a samurai, a samurai film, it's going to have loads of them in.
So, because, obviously, this was the first action movie, and... potentially the first samurai film, maybe the trope of swing just hadn't been done yet.
I mean, if this was a 80s action film, it's in there.
Yeah, but like you say, if it was an 80s action film, they would all hold the swords up and like a lightning strike would hit them, and they would have like the power of lightning.
That would happen. That's probably, there's a film out there somewhere, isn't there?
Yeah, there will
that
be.
That
does that. Mortal Kombat.
Yeah, soundtrack?
I really like the soundtrack in this.
I don't recall anything standing out. But when you played that, when you played that at the beginning, that was cool. That was a cool piece.
Yeah,
but
that's the only
I suppose it's a good thing because it didn't distract me from what was going on.
There's not a lot of music in this.
No,
a lot of the time it is just the sound of horses galloping and them talking and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But now that I've heard the iconic theme, I don't think I'll forget it.
No.
If someone played it to us, I'd be like, "Ah, Seven Samurai." As well as like the iconic shot right at the end of like the four swords on
at the
graves.
Top, yeah, at the top,
like I've seen that image, or I've probably seen the Simpsons version of that image a lot of times.
Yeah, the Simpsons definitely done this.
But now I know where it's from now. I quite like the soundtrack in this. I think it was just enough. Obviously, It's old. It sounds very old. It actually sounds older than the 50s. Maybe this is a culture difference, mm-hmm. but it sounded almost like Snow White-ish. As far as I'm aware, Snow White came out in the 30s. So maybe...
No, I think it was later than that.
We'll Snow have White. A look right
Snow
now.
Snow White's the first yeah. Disney film, isn't it? Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs.
Wait, sorry, man. We're just like just Google. Trying to Google something here. But yeah, I mean, I really like the soundtrack. Like you said, with that song, you'll recognise it now, and it works for this piece. So, and the lack of music is nice.
It is. Yeah. It's nice.
You know, obviously when the like I said, I can't really remember even when they're fighting. There must be the musical score under that to kind of
make yeah. It. There's a bit of and there's like drums and stuff.
Yeah.
Snow White came out in 1937.
Cool.
No, you're right. I apologize.
I think I said the 20s.
Oh, okay.
Right. So.
And if you don't know, millet is kind of like rice, but just not as good.
Okay.
It's cheap rice. It's like a cheap cereal grain.
Oh, right.
And that's why they were like, oh, don't eat the millet, eat the rice.
Because it must
rice
be good
is like
for you.
Posh millet.
It mustn't be good for your millet then, is it?
Apparently, yeah.
So how would you do this film differently?
Well, if I was doing it, I'd probably get rid of the overacting make it shorter. But in terms of the story itself and...
You know what I think would be really good? If I was going to make it, sorry to jump you, but instead of samurais, right... I would turn them into cowboys.
All right, yeah.
Yeah, uh-huh. So instead of them being like the like seven like samurai
in the west of
yeah,
America,
like the wild west.
Wild that's a good
west.
Idea. Then.
Yeah. And that would be like the western do. Translation.
I would
and all the cowboys would be really really fantastic and magnificent.
Oh yeah, that's yeah, you know what you should call it? The Magnificent Seven.
Can't even I would make them all. I would make them
all
into bugs.
I would call it the Magnificent Seven.
Yeah.
You make them what?
All into bugs.
All right.
And then like the bugs would be attached by like those big grasshoppers, and then they would send out some people to go and recruit some warriors to come and help fight the grasshoppers. I think it would work.
Wow,
that's
really...
not a bug's life. That's ants.
No, that's a bug's life.
That's a bug's life.
It's a bug's life. It is. They've literally now you've said it. They've literally stole the story.
Yeah.
It's the exact same thing, but with Bug's Life. It is. That's what they do. Apart from, aren't they already being enslaved at the beginning of Bug's
yeah,
Life?
Yeah, but so they are in this
yeah,
as well.
That's true. Yep.
Yeah, yeah.
This is a Bug's Life. And the Magnificent Seven, both versions of the remake, because there's...
came out a couple of years 80, ago.
80s, 80s
it's pretty
one.
Good.
There's an 80s
yeah,
one as well,
got
I think.
Denzel in, Chris Pratt, all of them. Ethan Hawke.
All of them.
All of them. All the guys. Every
one
of them.
All of the seven ones you'll probably recognise.
Yeah.
All right.
If I was going to do it differently, legit though, maybe just tighten it up a bit. I think it just updated, but you know, when you update a classic film, it's never as good.
Yeah, I mean...
It's always just a rubbish version, so maybe I would just leave it
yeah,
where it is.
Yeah, I think you've just got to let it be what it is. I mean, this is 8.7 on IMDb, and The Magnificent Seven is 6.9, so it's not as good.
Right.
They did update it, and, well, it's not as good, so. I would just leave it alone, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Leave it where it is.
Yeah.
Has it aged?
Yeah.
For reasons we spoke about.
It has. Yeah. I think it's aged in almost every sense.
Yeah.
Technically, obviously. Storytelling wise and visual storytelling cinematically yes as well,
but that doesn't make it a bad film.
No,
it makes if anything I don't think I'll watch it again just because I don't think I've got enough time left in my life to watch this but I probably would if a cinema was screening it and they were like we're screening it and it you know you do get the intermission and you can
and
see it on
some
the
nice
big screen.
Ice creams on.
Yeah, I would probably go and see it in that situation, but I think sitting at home, you do get distracted. With a film like this, and a lot of people wouldn't get through it, I don't think. So
no.
I'll say it again.
Have we got any more trivia, fun facts, fan theories? Is it in the Matrix?
It could be an early 0.2 version, possibly, of the Matrix.
The Matrix.
Point two.
Yeah.
The only thing I had was the clothing and the as the film progresses, they find more and more armor and add it to their outfit to a point where they're all dressed in that samurai thing.
Badass.
But it's just it's very similar to the One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. Well, it's the opposite of that, where Jack Nicholson's character loses his clothing and becomes like everyone else.
Oh, you know, how blends in.
Assimilates with the rest of the patients.
Whereas in the One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, that's a symbol of his defeat and it's like becoming like everyone else, whereas it's the opposite
actually,
of here.
Yeah. Actually, what I really liked, one of the scenes in this where the cocky samurai guy, he like kills two of the bandits and then takes the costume and then gets the other guy with a rifle. Thought, you know, that's what
that was. That was my favorite part in the film.
That's because it's like him going on his own little adventure.
Yeah.
And the main samurai is like, we shouldn't have done that because you kind of compromised us all.
Yeah.
So it, even though it was a good act,
it was to the detriment of the...
it was a selfish one. So,
Supposedly, this is George Lucas's favorite film. Which is cool because it was the samurai movies that influenced Star Wars.
This is Star Wars as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's so many. If you look through the list of famous directors who are inspired by this film, it's just unreal.
I mean, I think if you kind of the filmmakers who were making films in the 70s, obviously they were born in the 50s, if not a little bit earlier, and they grew up watching this, and I think seeing this at a cinema. And this epic of 3.5 hours long of this samurai thing, I think it would just be inspiring to then go on to make Star Wars.
Yeah.
You can definitely see, you know, why he wanted to make that. I've got a fact. So the longest version of this film is probably the one we all watched. Actually, there's a...
There's a shorter version I could have watched.
There's a 2 hours and 30 minutes version. The original UK release was 150 minutes. But we watched the 3 hours and 27 minute version, and that is 5,705 meters of film. Quite a bit of film.
That's a lot. How much?
5,705 meters.
Wow, over 5 kilometers of film.
That's what it says on IMDb. Film length,
Hey.
Which is quite impressive. I wonder if that's true. It's on IMDb, so...
Supposedly, when it opened, it was the most expensive Japanese film ever made, which kind of makes sense. There was a lot of location stuff and a lot of sets that burnt down.
A
lot of people.
It stopped twice or something, didn't it? Production and things like that, and went over budget and over time and everything.
But supposedly, there was like a super modest budget in terms of Hollywood. In the 50s. So like Hollywood was making like North by Northwest. Was that in the 50s?
Yeah.
Yes.
And then Kurosawa was making this. And they didn't have as much money.
Cool.
We haven't decided what we're doing next week. Should we stop and...
The power of editing...
We are going to watch...
Ace Ventura, Pet Detective. Ah, okay, yeah, let's watch that. That'll be good.
This is on Netflix, so if anyone wants to watch it, I love these two.
Jim Carrey's like my hero.
I mean, the particular time when he did this and the other ones back to back, brilliant. And
this was like on his run of just hit after hit after hit.
Yeah, it's a little bit different. I think it'll be a bit of a lighter move from the last couple we've done.
And I haven't seen this in a very, very long time.
Yeah,
I think I've only seen it twice, and there must have been like 5 and 6.
Yeah, I reckon it's probably the
so
age.
I don't even remember.
What it's about.
Him as a character, though, it's like we'll be able to like get in real deep into his particular character as well, because he's got loads of mannerisms and characteristics and everything. So I'm really looking forward to that now. Something fun.
Cool. Watch Ace Ventura Pet Detective. I think it's on Netflix. If you're in the UK, I don't know, around the world or whatever.
You'll be able to get it. You probably get it in the dollar store.
Yeah. It's
true.
Probably.
Yeah.
Full circle. So that was, you haven't seen that?
I haven't seen it.
We have now. All right, we've got some questions from Instagram, right, Rich?
Yeah, so Nate over at Nate Films Tutorials, he asks, what's your favourite Star Wars prequel?
I like the third one purely because of the fight scene between Obi-Wan and Anakin, the one where they're fighting in the... Mm-hmm. Just that makes it for the film.
In the lava.
Really cool.
Does Rogue One count?
That's what I said.
If Rogue One counts, then Rogue One.
Solo's not bad, but Rogue One's better.
Yeah, Rogue One would be my favourite if it counts. Yeah. If not, Episode One, but just
the fight
just
scene.
The fight scene with Darth Maul.
Yeah,
I think what the prequels have got for them, which nobody ever talks about, is the amazing lightsaber fights.
Yeah.
They're spectacular.
Yeah, the class.
Yeah.
Really, really good.
All of them, just the fight scenes.
just a montage of the fight scenes.
Yeah. Just when Darth Maul turns up with his double lightsaber and the music starts.
And the pod race, I'll have that as well in there, in the montage.
Really?
Okay. Not the build-up to it, just the pod race itself.
What I really love about the prequels is all the stuff about politics in the Senate. That's my favourite part of a Star Wars film.
Sitting down and talking.
Sitting down and talking.
You know what? I don't really like too many of the Star Wars films, so... I'll just put that out there. And I'm a massive fan of Star Wars.
All right, let's go.
Got one from Mr. Harry Gray. How do you keep the film look running? How do you get funding for your films?
I think this is quite a common question for you, isn't it?
Yeah, like, we get it quite a bit.
How do you... Because you're quite prolific filmmakers. You upload 2 videos a week and you make films on top of that. How do you maintain that? Well, not maintain it, but yeah, how do you fund that? How do you fund it?
We don't make any money, but we somehow manage to fund the film look by the view. Well, the thing is with YouTube, it's multiple sources of income. We are at no way of like a livable wage or anything.
No.
It is very much like we're doing it just off what we've got. So we've got a sponsor. That's our main kind of source, Premium Beat and Rocket Sock.
Premiumbeat.com.
Go and check them out. Links in the video description below. And then obviously views, ad revenue. We don't get a lot because, you know, we're still, I think we've just hit 600,000 views over the past 2 years.
Which is a lot, but in YouTube.
Some people get that in a video, you know. Some people get that like a day.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you've got like AdSense, so that's from the views, and then affiliates, and it's kind of just a mixture at the minute. And then
I think that's good for your fans, I'll call them, to know, or people who watch your videos to know, is to, like, setting up those expectations if they want to be YouTubers as such.
Yeah.
That,
and kind of
the money won't come rolling in.
No, definitely not. For some people, you know, you'll get those random occasions where they'll just blow up and they'll be making millions and millions and millions. You know how we fund our short films? It's not self-funded. It's like, it's viewer funded pretty much. We don't ask people for money. We've never done a Kickstarter.
It's out of our own pocket, but we don't fill our pockets, but the money that we get is from people watching our videos, getting the views up, and then the sponsor goes, all right, there's a slot. You're getting so many views, so many clicks. He has a little bit of money.
Yeah, so the more people watch and the more people like subscribe to the channel.
Comment, like, and subscribe.
You know, the more we'll get, and it allows us to make the films.
Yeah.
The films we make, you know, we haven't made anything over £500.
Not yet.
Not you know, that's kind of our budget and probably our limit at the minute. So, yeah. You know, that's how we do it. If you don't have a channel and you want to fund your films, you don't need a lot, just go out and kind of make them and then build it up, you know. You don't need, you know, £1,000 to go and make a film. You can make one for £100 and it might not be as good as the £1,000 one, but at least you can work up to that. That's what we've done.
Will Pattinson 95 asks, is it coming home?
No, it's not.
Why do you read that one out?
This was, he sent this before we got knocked out.
Alright.
It is for France. That's my team. Hope they win.
Just depressed now.
Yeah.
Forgot about it for a bit.
Yeah, we are English, by the way, and England got knocked out of the World Cup. That was.
You know what? I think they did bring it home.
No, I think they should stay there.
Because for four weeks.
They are, they've got an extra, got the third place playoff. Yeah.
For 4 weeks, this country was in solidarity with each other. No. Everyone had the flags. Everyone was painting faces. Everyone was throwing lager in the air during that 5-minute free kick from Trippier, which, by the way, that was a really good free kick.
It was a good free kick.
It was, you know, almost worth the loss, just that free kick. And we were all high as kites.
So, but it's not coming home.
Give it 2 years.
Yeah.
And the last thing we've got is actually a voice message from Noptop via the Anchor app.
Anchor app. So on Anchor, you can listen to the podcast, but you can also send in, it's like a phone call.
It's like a voicemail sort of thing.
Like a voicemail. So we've got one from Noptop about Silence of the Lambs and kind of what he said about it. So I'm going to play that now, see if this works.
Anops up here. I just wanted to chime in real quick. Listen to the podcast here on Anchor. It's probably the only time I use this app, and it's the only podcast I listen to. But anyways, I wanted to chime in real quick. Didn't want to get into a big debate about my opinions of the movie Silence of the Lambs, but I did want to talk about what people don't really reference very often, which is leave them wanting more. And I think that's what we get with Hannibal's character. The reason we leave the movie and we're like, I don't even know how I feel about the movie, but I really liked his character. I think we liked his character because we saw him at little moments throughout the movie and we didn't get like overloaded with it. So we looked forward to seeing the interaction that they would have on screen. And we would come back to them throughout the movie and then see his story unfold just a little bit without knowing all the details. I feel like that's the reason his character is so valued in this movie. Because if you think about it, the movie was about so many other things, but he always gets pulled out of that movie as being the iconic. But anyways, keep up the good work. Nom top.
So that was a message from Nop Top.
That was well cool.
Yeah. I was very vocal about Silence of the Lambs. But
yeah,
I
really loved it, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. I do agree with what he says. You don't see him a lot, so you're wanting more.
But we agreed that Hannibal as a character was fantastic.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's just the rest of it. I did want that more, though, just because he was so interesting.
And we've got that. You've got that with two sequels and a Hannibal prequel TV show on Netflix.
I think their philosophy for those remakes was just leave them wanting less.
Just show them everything. Yeah. Apparently the Hannibal TV show is really good, though. You actually see him like eat people and that. That's a big one. Have you ever seen the film called Raw? Don't. Because she eats people. Gruesome.
Spoilers!
Did you see it in the poster? She's like munching on like a finger and that.
Aye, but it looks like a chicken wing.
That's true. So thank you very much for Knock Top for that message. If people do want to send us in a message, either it's via Twitter or Instagram or via Anchor, it's pretty cool. You can phone in and we can hear your voice on the podcast.
Yeah, it was real cool.
Do that at the Film Look at on everything.
On everything.
Is that
a new social media?
Yeah, everything. At the Film Look.
On everything, it is.
Go on a website and type in the Film Look and we'll come up.
That's a good name for social media. Everything. If you want to set one up to rival Facebook.
Everything.
You go add me on everything.
Just add me on everything. Oh, yeah. Hey, we'll cut that out of the podcast and we'll get that we'll get that signed up. That is the end of the podcast. Thank you for listening to this week's podcast where we try and achieve it one shot at a time. And until next time, goodbye.
Bye-bye.
2 seconds, I need to find out what goodbye is in Japanese. Oh, never mind. Bye.